It's more in the Holy Gospels according to St. Luke, the 6th chapter. Jesus says, "But I say to you that listen, love your enemies and do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from anyone who takes away your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. Give to everyone who begs from you. And if anyone takes away your goods, do not ask for them again. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you?" I'm reading that twice. "If you lend to those from whom you hope to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love your enemies, do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, for He is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father in heaven is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back." This is the gospel of our Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
You may be seated. I have actually been praying for you in this congregation for quite some time, ever since Pastor Martin had told me that he was going to be taking off down to Ohio. And throughout this process, and then of course my father-in-law came and was your interim pastor, at least until it got cold. And I won't say that he wimped out and went to Florida where it's in the 80s, and he tells us that every day. But I've been praying for you through this process, and it's nearly coming to an end. And it is my hope and my prayer that every single one of you is praying for those who are on your call committee. Do we have any call committee people sitting here this morning? We've got a few of you. Okay, right around here. You guys have an enormous task. And as you enter in this process, and I guess Thursday is sort of like final paperwork day, right? That's when Lauren comes and kind of goes over it, makes sure it says what you want it to say. You ever done that? Written something, gotten something so ready, and then have somebody else read it and say, "Is this what you meant to say?" you're like, "No, don't read it that way." Well, I did. So, but going over that to make sure it says what you want to. And then if you wish, if Paul grants it to me, during the meeting that you're about to have, if you want them, I'll offer some insights just being here. I've been looking around and getting to meet people and doing stuff like that. But as you prepare to have pastors come and interview to be your pastor, and you have to, you know, have those gifts of discernment, I'll share with you what I've seen just with a fresh pair of eyes today. But as you do that search, you'll realize pastors are incredibly different, and everybody does things a little bit differently and so forth, and the key is always finding the match. And today, I'm going to do a sermon in a form of almost storytelling and telling a story that way. And it can be one of those things at the end of it, you can always say to your call committee, "Look, this morning was all right, but whatever you do, find a pastor that's not like that guy we had this morning." That's okay to say that. Give them some guidance. So starting with a story, I'm going to go back to growing up down in Trenton. And I was approximately 7 years old, and I've got a sister who's 4 years older than me and a brother who's 4 years older than her. And so I can remember this one day absolutely vividly. My brother coming back into the house through the front door, and I was sitting there in the living room watching him, and he had this super long box with him that was covered up with some bags, so I couldn't see what it was. And I remember just being so absolutely excited, what is this thing? And so there in front of me, he took the bags off the box, and it was a model that he was going to build. And it was a model of a battleship the USS Missouri. And I remember right then thinking, yes, it's mine. And then my brother performed for me that incredibly helpful service that older brothers provide for younger brothers all across the world. He taught me how the world really works. And he assured me that there were no circumstances under which my grubby little paws were ever going to get near this battleship. But he couldn't keep me from trailing behind him. So I followed him as he went downstairs. I went right down into the basement with him there. And I watched as he set the box with the model in it over on the bar. And then I also watched as he went over by the stairs and he took a little card table out from alongside the stairs and he set it up there in the basement right underneath the good light. And then I watched as he went back over by the stairs and he took out a single folding chair and he set that up right next to the table. Then I watched as he went around to the other side of the stairs where there was that cupboard underneath the stairs, and he went to his not-so-secret hiding place, and he got out his glue and other things for putting the model together, and he set them up on the table. And then once again, I thought to myself, yes, this is when I get to help. And once again, my brother provided that service for me, of assuring me of just how the world really works. And that I was not going to come anywhere near his table while he put this model together. And while he couldn't completely throw me out of the basement because of Mom's rules, he could force me to be over there. But even from my spot over there, I got to watch as he painstakingly, carefully, almost lovingly put the model together. And after what to me felt like decades, he finally got to that last part. It was taking the little American flag and just sticking it right there on top of the battleship. And once again, I remember thinking to myself, yes, now it's mine. And once again, my brother provided for me that service that older brothers provide for younger brothers everywhere. He assured me that under no circumstances was my grubby little paws ever going to come into contact with this model. And beyond that, that perhaps my eyes had seen it for the last time. And he went around to the back part of the basement where my dad had an office, and there were these really high shelves on the far wall there. And he put it up on the highest possible shelf. Now, remember, I'm 7. I wasn't always this tall. And I remember in order to be able to, I had to like take a couple steps back and do one of these things to even see the little flag sticking up there. Well, I don't know how much time passed, a week, maybe more, but then there came the day that it was my opportunity because my parents left. And they left me in the care of my two older siblings. We had sort of a very firm hierarchy. But I don't think my parents' car was even around the corner, and we only lived 3 houses from the corner. And my brother was out the front door, down the street to go do whatever it is 15-year-old boys do. And if you don't know what that is, don't ask. You don't want to know. So then I was just left in the care of my sister. And the word care, she had a book, which meant an explosion could go off in the house and she would have absolutely no idea what was going on at all. And so I went down the basement and I went there and I looked up and, yep, little American flag still sticking up there. So I took the stool from the side of my father's desk and I sat up underneath the shelves and I scampered up on the shelves and I reached up. But I still wasn't tall enough. That was no problem. Like some little spider boy, I decided to start climbing the shelves until I got up there, grabbed the model, came down, and yes, it was mine. Now, I don't know what kind of television any of you may have grown up watching or been a part of, but mine included a healthy diet, not only of Scooby-Doo, but also of Coyote and Roadrunner. But there were things that were lacking in those programs. You see, I had another thing that I really enjoyed as a kid, and that was Tonka trucks. Anybody remember Tonka trucks? And in all those programs I had seen, despite all of the Coyote's explosions and rockets and everything else that were super neat, I had never seen, in a scene together, a dump truck and a battleship. And I had never seen what would happen if the two met one another at a high rate of speed. I don't know how much time passed, but then even into my little kid brain, it occurred to me that I had a problem. Because scattered all around me were pieces of battleship. But then I thought to myself, no problem. I know what to do. So I went over beside the stairs and got out a card table and pulled it over underneath the good light and set it up. Then I went back over to the side and I took out a single folding chair, came back over and set it up there at the table. And then I went to my brother's not-so-secret hiding place in the cupboard underneath the stairs on the other side and brought out his glue and got it set up. Then I gathered together what I think was all of the pieces of the battleship and got them set up. And then, with my trusty dog next to me, I sat down to work. Now, it's important that I ask a question here just to see if you're with me. Have any of you ever had one of those moments in your life where you were absolutely sure that your life was about to end? Mine came as I was sitting there at the table, and I heard the front door open. And for the briefest possible moments, I wanted to hope that it was actually my parents returning. But those heavy footfalls coming across the ceiling above me told me that, nope, it was my brother. And then it was further confirmed that it was my brother when I could hear him go directly to the refrigerator, open up the refrigerator, take out the gallon of milk, and drink directly from the gallon of milk as my mom had told him not to do probably thousands of times, and then put it right back in the fridge and shut the door. And then my heart nearly stopped as I heard his steps go next to the basement door and begin to descend the stairs. Now, even as a young man, I had a pretty firm faith. And at that moment, I was also positive that I wanted to be anywhere but there. Now, I'd heard about how, you know, difficult and challenging the city of Detroit could be. But I was sure I had a better chance out there with a little stick, with a little, you know, packet with everything I'm carrying and my entire life behind me, living on the streets of Detroit than I had of living in that basement with my brother at that particular moment. And so with my strong faith, I prayed to the patron saint of little brothers everywhere, Saint Mommy. And I prayed that I might be anywhere other than there. But even into my little brain, the thought crept that even my mom might leave me there and turn for at least a little while to let my brother give me all that I deserved and had earned. And with that thought, and again, I told you I wanted to be anywhere else, just to be able to run and hide, but I couldn't. You see, I had managed to glue myself to the table. And the evidence of my crime was all around me, because not only was I glued to the table, but the pieces of battleship were in big globs of glue all over the table, all over me, and much to her horror, all over my dog. And I remember my brother coming into view as he came down the steps, the feet first and then the rest of them. And I will never forget that look on his face as he got to the bottom of the stairs and he just drank in the entire scene before him. I expected him to come directly at me. And as I said, I knew what I had earned. I knew that I deserved it. But instead, a miracle happened. because instead of coming directly at me, my brother turned and he went around to that cupboard under the stairs, and he came back with this big tin can of something I had never seen before. He introduced me to the miracle of thinner. And he went to work, first releasing my arms from the table, my fingers one from another, and then he began to get the pieces of Battleship, much to her delight, first off of the dog, and then off of me, and off of the table. And once he had everything fairly well cleaned up, he then went over beside the other side of the stairs, and he took out a second chair, and he brought it over to the table. And he set up that second chair, and he invited me to sit. And then, painstakingly, carefully, even lovingly, he taught me how to fix what I had broken. And then when we were done, it didn't look quite like it had before. But he offered it to me. And he taught me how to treat it with respect and with care. Today's gospel lesson, as was pointed out in the children's sermon, is not one of the easiest ones to do. It's one where I've heard in it almost an accusatory tone, because I've always pictured in reading this that Jesus is just talking straight to me and saying, Sean, you need to love even your enemies. You need to give to those who need. And to do these things that seem hard to do. And as I look back on my own life, I can realize that I have failed at so much of what is laid out in today's gospel reading. And I wonder, Lord, can anybody stand up to this ideal that you place before us? One of the wonderful things about going through this whole process of becoming a pastor is, and it didn't feel wonderful at the time, but learning the ancient Greek language that the New Testament is written in. And in doing that, I realized that, you know, where it says, you must love your enemies, it's not the singular you. Now, I've also told you I spent some time down in New Orleans. Loved it. Great place. But those in the South have a better way than us Yankees do of talking about a plural you. You know that expression, right? Y'all. You all. Everybody together. And throughout this passage, Jesus is not just addressing one person. He's not picking out Peter or John or one of the other disciples. And he's not just addressing individuals. But instead, he's saying, all y'all together. Can you picture Jesus talking with a southern accent? Spices things up, doesn't it? But he's talking about all of us together. This is how our community is called to live. And it's not that any one of us is ever going to perfect it, but may we as a community keep working together to be able to do this. I want to pick on one of the things that he said right there. Always give to those who beg. The bishop's office is right in Detroit, right there on Jefferson Avenue. If you know where the Belle Isle Bridge cuts across, we're just, it's either north or east of that, depending upon, you know, it's kind of up the street there. And on my way to and from work every day, I see people on the side of the road, on street corners, who are begging. Some have little signs, other things like that. And I can remember throughout my life always wondering, what's better? Is it good to give? But then I had people point out, well, you know, if Judy's on the side of the road and you just go and give her a few bucks, what's she going to use it for? Something that's not helpful, right? Sorry, Judy. you sat in the front row, you get picked on. yeah, next week, watch, she's going to be back there. you know, how are they going to use it? And there's this wonderful story. C.S. Lewis, are you familiar with him and his writings and so forth? Well, he and a friend were once walking. There was a person begging, and C.S. Lewis just gave the guy some money and told him to be well, and that God loved him. And the other guy kind of reprimanded Lewis, saying, "What are you doing? He's probably just going to use that and go buy alcohol with it." To which C.S. Lewis responded, "I'm not sure that I wasn't going to go buy alcohol with it." I had a man in my first congregation, never finished high school, older gentleman, incredibly wise. And he shared with me, "Pastor Sean, I don't worry about that too much. Because no matter how I give, whether it's through taxation and I can see waste happening all around me, whether it's through giving to big charities and I might wonder, you know, are they doing things as efficiently as they can, or whether it's directly to a person on the street, I don't worry about the outcome so much. But if I see Steve, and Steve is in need, I hear Jesus' voice telling me to give and to help. And I leave the results to God." And so from that day on, I've always tried to travel in my car with, I just have some extra granola bars, some water, those tiny little bottles of water. And when I pass people, I'll roll the window down, look them in the eye, offer them something to eat and to drink, and then be able to say, "God loves you." And to treat them as a person worthy of dignity and respect, not mattering what their circumstances might be. I think that's what Jesus is calling us to do, for all of us to work together in that incredible way. I've been impressed here at St. John's of all the ways that you're involved, whether it's here locally and the way in which you help people, but all the way in faraway places like Tanzania and working with our companion synod there and being able to make a difference in people's lives, even the lives of people that you may never meet face to face. In our world today, there is so much division. And I can tell I'm getting to be an old man because I now say to my daughter and her friends things like, "Well, back in my day," and they make mention of dinosaurs and other things. But I don't ever remember the split in our society being this sharp. And it seems to me that we have this incredible tool called social media with all that comes with it that should, in some ways, right, bring us closer together, help us stay and be more connected. But I worry in some ways that even that is being used to further divide and to isolate. Because I know so many people who say, "Well, so-and-so posted on their thing something that I disagree with, so I unfriended them. Because I only want to see and be exposed to those who agree with me." And then it seems like there's almost this piece of those who disagree with us turning them somehow into the enemy. That they are somebody else, unworthy. And then, and you see this in our political discourse all over the place, people just brutalizing each other and not pausing for a moment to say, "Wait a minute, we're all on the same team." Well, here as we gather for worship, I'm not going to do this to you, but I'm pretty sure that if I went through, say, half a dozen of our social issues of the day and asked you to stand on one side of the sanctuary or the other, depending on the issue, we might end up kind of split down the middle all over the place on different ones, and people may even trade sides depending upon which issue. And there goes the earpiece. Paul warned me about that I should have tightened it up better. There we go. And yet we're all here to worship. I think that's what Jesus is talking about in our lesson today. I'm going to say something that might startle you. I don't think it's important that we all agree on every single issue. I don't at all. But rather that in those places where we disagree, what does matter is how we treat each other. And what does matter is that we work together for a common good, as best as we can discern what that is. And that's what it means to be the body of Christ. And so when Jesus talks, and again, there's another probably week's worth of sermons in those passages about what forgiveness really is, and that's not being somebody's doormat where they just constantly wipe their feet on you. But instead, what Jesus is calling us to do and to be as a people of God is that we're people who don't just respond. You're familiar with that part of the brain, the amygdala, that says you either fight or you fly, you know, go away, run, or you stay and you fight. But that Jesus is saying that there's a third way. That when something is not good that is happening in front of us, we don't have to go into attack mode. Or we don't have to run away and hide. But instead, that we can stand strong in faith, and here's the most important one, and in love, and lovingly reach out to try to change what it is that's broken, to try to fix that which has gone wrong, and to love everybody, even those we disagree with. It's an incredible picture that Jesus is painting of what Christian community can be. And as you're now in this interim time between pastors, as your call committee works diligently to find who the next pastor will be, it is my hope and it is my prayer that you, the people of St. John's, will continue to be a people who have been called together by God, not because you all agree on everything, but because love is your highest ideal, and that you will take that message of love, no matter who your pastor is, and you will share that message of love right here in this town, and as you've already been doing, let that love spread and shine throughout the world. That's what Jesus is calling us to. Amen.